For more presentations like this, visit www.xenos.org.
All right, welcome to our monthly parenting meeting. We like to do these during the school year, September through May. It's usually the first Wednesday of the month. And if you have to miss a month, you can listen to all these teachings online. You just go to xenos.org/parenting, and it will have all the previous teachings that we've had here. So I just am grateful to have Patrice here this morning to talk. She has four grown kids, her oldest being 28.
Almost 28.
26 and one set of twins.
Yeah.
20 at 24.
Four, right.
Yeah. Girls. So she's got girls, boys, and everything in between. So she has a lot of wisdom to share with us about her experience with parenting, and we're also really gifted to have her as we're really fortunate. She's a gifted teacher too. So why don't I open us up with a word of prayer, yep, and we can get started. God, we're so grateful that you are here with us, that you care about our parenting, that you want to come alongside us and help us, that we're not here to do this alone. And so we just really pray that you would help open our hearts to hear what you want us to hear, God. Help challenge our perspective. Mm-hmm. It's so hard sometimes to fight against what the values of our culture say and to really look at things from your perspective. And so we just really pray that you would help remind us the things that are the most important and to be able to mold our lives around those things, God. Amen.
Amen. All right. Thanks, Sherry. Okay. Stay at home. They didn't ask me to do this today because we had a perfect family, nor am I the perfect parent. That was not the reason. But I must say there's probably nothing I enjoy talking about more than being able to stay at home with our kids. I did get to stay at home, and I was really fortunate. I had a lot of fun. I don't know if some of you have a similar background. When I went to law school, so I had my law. I was in law school, headed towards third year, and I had this vision that I would be I really care about being a lawyer. So I had this vision, and God had a different vision. He definitely had a different vision for me, because third year of law school, my life came crashing down for lots of different reasons. Lots of different reasons. And graciously, God sort of put me in a corner and I couldn't make my life work anymore. And so I realized I was separated from God. It didn't take a brain surgeon. My life was, the way I was living my life, it was pretty clear that I was in rebellion against God. So spring of my third year of law school, I realized I was lost. I needed a savior. And so I asked Christ to pay for my sins. I entrusted my life to him. So that was third year of law school in 81. So I became a Christian then. And then I got involved in fellowship. Fellowship, what the heck's that? I got involved with other Christians and hung out with them and was taught how to study the Bible. And then I met my husband, and then I got married. Well, I met Mike, and then we got married. Then he became my husband. And then we had kids. And somewhere along the line, God changed my heart. From wanting to be an attorney, I wanted to be a stay-at-home mom. And I can tell you that I've never regretted that decision at all. I joke. I am a notary for life. I just have you know. Now, some people pay a couple $100 and become a notary for life. I paid thousands of dollars to Capital University to be a notary for life. So I get challenged often, like, why, oh gosh, don't you miss being a lawyer? And I'm like, I don't. God has given me a rich life that I don't deserve, that I never thought about, because and part of that rich life he gave me was the opportunity to stay at home. And so it's a matter of perspective, right? I loved, and plus when you're old, the only thing you can remember are the good parts of parenting. You don't remember the time where you're like, you're getting ready to go out, you haven't been out for so long, and you hold your baby up because you're getting ready to leave and they puke all over you. You know, I don't remember those moments. Are you trying to sleep? Right, you haven't slept for four nights, and you finally get that baby bear, you think, oh my God, oh, no. And then they wake up, and you're trying not to swear, you're trying to be patient. Oh, honey, go back. Yeah. So, you don't remember those things when you get old like I am. And so there's costs of parenting. Give me some costs that you probably incurred this morning. Well, if your kids went trick-or-treating, then you all incurred a cost this morning, right? So what were some of the costs you incur because you've chosen to stay at home with your kids? Frustration with your own self, right? With the kids, so you're frustrated. And you think, God, if I could just go to work, I could sit in a cubicle. Oh, God, it'd be great. Okay, so frustration. Financial costs, absolutely. If one person stays home, that means you don't make the same amount of money if you both went. So there's a financial cost. You can't go out to eat as often as you'd like. Your cars are junkier. The washing machine breaks more often. Right, I understand that. Financial costs. Right! What do you mean there's no such thing as your own schedule when you're a parent? Anybody try to actually get the dishes done this morning or try to use the bathroom this morning? Right? Your agenda, my time, my rights, my sleep, my plans, my kitchen, anything, right? So the idea, we're going to go through a couple of these. So there's incredible costs when you choose to stay at home with your kids. But whether you see staying at home with your children as a thankless job or a great privilege is a matter of perspective, right? The same, and we're going to look at three things in particular, that you can look at one thing one way and think this is great, or you look at another way and you think, my gosh, I'm going to go crazy. So it's a matter of perspective. Now, thanks to my daughter, she helped me find a video that shows us how important perspective is on something. Okay, so then your perspective is going to impact your parenting, right? If you think it's a thankless job, you're quite grumpy, unpleasant. I'm not allowed to swear on these tapes, but you're not very nice, right? But if you think of it a privilege, it changes everything. So, what is this? Casio watch, right? I've got a film clip, thanks to my daughter Megan, of Jimmy Kimmel. What they did is they stuck an Apple sticker on the back of the Casio watch. They told these people, this is an Apple Watch, the new Apple Watch that Apple is going to get out someday. And then they asked them, and these people, their perception is it's an Apple Watch, okay? And this clip is going to show you how, what they thought about this Apple Watch that's really a Casio watch.
Apple Computers is having a good week. They reported earnings yesterday. They had more than $37 billion in revenue last quarter. They earned $1.28 per share, which is very good. And they're rumored to be working on some exciting new products. It's believed that Apple is soon going to begin production on two larger versions of the iPhone, which is good because I have to say, I hate how well my iPhone fits in my pocket right now. I wish it jutted. I really do. The current iPhone has a 4-inch screen, and they think that the new iPhones will have 4.7 and 5.5-inch screens. And the larger screens are great because it will allow you to be about 30% more likely to be hit by a cab while looking at your phone. It's actually a brilliant plan, you know, because they make the bigger phones, and then in 2 years, they will release the iPhone mini, which is the size of the phones we have now. And we'll wait in line for like 3 days for it, because that's how we are. In the fall, Apple's expected to debut what people are calling a smart watch, which they say will revolutionize the way we slowly and loudly repeat ourselves into electronic devices. They filed for a patent. It indicates the device might be called the iTime, but nobody knows what it's going to be called or what it will do. And again, this is a product that does not exist yet, so we thought we'd have some fun with it. We went out onto Hollywood Boulevard today. We showed people a device that we claimed was the new Apple Watch. What it really is a Casio watch that cost us $20, and we stuck an Apple logo on the back of it. But do people love Apple products so much that they will look beyond that? Let's find out.
So we're here with the latest from Apple. It's the iTime smartwatch. Would you like to take a look?
Awesome.
What's awesome about this watch?
It looks a lot like something that's affordable. It's lightweight.
Do you like that it tells you the date as well as the time?
Yes, I think that's a neat feature, actually.
Do you like that it displays time as well as date?
I do, indeed. And it's very light. And it's kind of like old school, but it's still in style, you know?
It's still classic Apple style?
Right.
It's nice rubber wrist band. I do like the big numbers, easy to see.
It displays not only the hour, but the minute and the second. And you can also just look at it and know what day of the week it is.
Right.
Is this impressive to you?
Yeah, it's. I would wear it.
Are you excited that it's always in airplane mode?
Always in airplane mode? Oh, no, that's good. That's good. Definitely saves on the battery.
It has an alarm.
An alarm? You need to wake up, so.
It also has a countdown, and it has a stopwatch. It's water resistant. Are you impressed by those features?
I'm pretty impressed. Those are the things I would ask for in a watch.
Do you like the fact that it's water resistant, that it has a backlight, it has a timer?
I just like that it has an Apple insignia on the back.
I mean, if it's Apple, it's good, right?
If it's Apple, it's good. Why don't you tell me about what you like about this watch?
Really, because it's Apple. You know, Apple is a brand name that I love, and I have the computer, and I have the phone, and I have the iPad. So because it's Apple, that would be what would impress me.
So you'd buy anything?
I would pretty much buy anything from Apple.
Even a Casio watch with a sticker on the back?
I guess the answer is yes. And we never got the watch back either.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Jimmy.
So, the matter of perception, they assumed it was a Apple watch. And because of that, they made fools of themselves. And so we're going to look at the value of staying home with your kids through God's perspective. And if you're new here today, I hope your friend that invited you told you this was going to be a Bible study, so you're not surprised. But we are going to look through God's perspective. And why would you do it? Because he's God. If God is who he says he is, if he is sovereign, if he's all-knowing, if he's created us, if he knows the beginning from the end, why wouldn't we look at it from his perspective about this whole issue of stay at home? And so we're going to look at it through God's perspective because he's God. But the other reason is because he loves us. He's not this mean, distant God that just says do this or do that. He's a God that loves us. And the primary way that we know he loves us, in spite of how crazy it can be with your kids, is that he died for us. Romans 5, he says, listen to the words that Paul uses, who wrote this book of Romans, describes us, because we want to think we're pretty neat and swell. He says, for why we are helpless, at the right time Christ died for the ungodly, but God demonstrates his own love towards us in the why we're yet sinners, Christ died for us. For if while we were enemies, we are reconciled to God through the death of his son, much more, having been reconciled, shall we be saved by his life. And so the reason we're going to look at this from God's perspective and not what we think or what we feel is because God is who he is and he loves us. And that makes it worthwhile. He saved us from his wrath. He saved us from what we deserved. And so he's well worth listening to. And so the question you may have to ask yourself this morning, are you even willing to listen to God's perspective on staying home with your kids? Because that's the most fundamental issue. Do you really believe God is who he is? Do you believe he died for you and saved you? And if you believe that, you would be, quite frankly, you'd be a fool. You'd be foolish. You'd literally be a fool not to listen to what he has to say on such an important issue because he knows what's best and he loves us. So, with that in mind, I just want to look at three areas of potential costs of being at home with your kids. And then we're going to look generally at what our culture tells us, what part of our own self tells us about this topic. And then we're going to look at and see what God says about this topic. And I think these are three key struggles anytime you're talking about staying home with your kids. And the first one is the financial cost. It will and it has. Again, if we had the time, you could go around and we could have an incredible list of all the financial costs you've chosen to incur because you've chosen to stay at home with your kids. From broken down, you can't buy a new car, so you have a broken down car. You fixed appliances instead of getting new appliances. So you know what that is, right? There's great costs. You can't deny that. But yet, if there's this inordinate, there's the impact on parenting, there is an impact on our parenting if there's an inordinate focus on money either way. If you're worried about money, it comes out in anxiety, right? Your kid says, can we do this? No. They're like, God, I was just asking, you know, whatever. You're distracted because you're worried about money. We can get bitter, resentful, anxious. Again, if we had the time, you could all tell me how your anxiety over lack of money is exposed in your parenting through impatience to distraction, all kinds of crap, right? Or it can flip on the other side that if you don't have enough money, it bears it out in a certain way, right? If you do have money, it bears itself out in another way because what becomes important? What we can buy. Billy has to have the most newest, neatest iPhone watch. He's got to have every single opportunity because we have the money. And because we have money, we can do this. And therefore, we should do that. And so money, if we don't have God's perspective on this whole issue of finance, it's going to impact your kids one way or the other. And the bottom line, it won't be good. It won't be good. And so what's God's perspective when you think about money and stuff? Well, the most there's a bunch of them, but one that I find hard to believe, and I think most of us do, is that money won't make you happy. Stuff doesn't make us happy. But even though we really believe it, because you probably thought, God, if I could just have a car that works, if I could just have, you know how you hold things up with sticks to try to make it last, and then you bump it, and then the table falls, and everything falls. If I just had a table that had four legs at work, I'd have the best day ever. I'd be so happy. Now, what's really crazy is secular study after secular study makes it clear that money and stuff won't make us happy. But obviously, the American culture, and in my own heart, I don't have to look much further in my own heart, we don't believe it. I should have found out what the total amount of consumer debt is in our culture. It is staggering. And this is not just house and cars. It's stuff and more stuff and more stuff, right? And so the bottom line is, when it comes to money, when you begin to get anxious about it or bitter about it, you have to realize, I wouldn't be any happier if I had more money or if I had more stuff. Again, there's this heart, this arc thing. I don't know the right word, but there's this point where you have your basic needs met, you're happy, and more money, you go down this curve of contentment. And again, it's not some Christian who's making this up. Secular studies show it. And so money is not going to make you happier. Leaving your kids and going to get a 40-hour week job, it's not going to make anybody happier to have more stuff. You just got to clean it then. And who wants to do that? Well, so that's sort of the negative. But the positive, this promise. And again, I'm merely probably reminding you of a lot of the stuff you guys know. But that's one of the reasons when I had kids, I came to these things all the time because I needed to be reminded. Like in 2 Peter, right? I needed to be reminded because often in the day-to-day, you forget this. And you're thinking about, how are you going to make that kid learn that phonogram? He still can't get it, right? That's what we end up thinking about instead of these kind of truths. So when it comes to money, he says he promises to care for us. He promises. And if God promises, he cannot break a promise. He is not like those of us of the extrovert persuasion where we make promises and we never intend to keep them beyond the 30 seconds that we made the promise, right? He's not like that. If God makes a promise, he can do nothing but fulfill the promise. And the promise, you guys know it. Again, you know it. He says, therefore, I tell you, don't worry about your life, what you will eat or drink, or about your body, what you'll wear. Is not life more than food, and the body more than clothes? Look at the birds of the air. They don't sow or reap or store away in barns, and yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not much more valuable than they? Can any one of you, by worrying, add a single hour to your life? My gosh, if we could, we'd all live to be 1,000, right? Therefore, don't worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will worry about itself. Each day has enough trouble of its own. And so God said, not only will money not make you happy, but I promise to take care of you. Now, does this promise that he'll take care of us mean that you can go spend money like a madwoman? No, it doesn't mean that. Like, if you see the latest gadget, I must buy it, or my little child, my little Billy Bob or Ellie Mae is just going to be totally destroyed because they don't have the newest, fanciest. No, you know that. It doesn't mean that at all. It means, yes, we live simply. We live simply. And it may mean that you go pick up a little babysitting job to make a little extra money, but you're still at home with your kids. But he promises to care for us, and he will. And again, if we had the time, I bet you guys could tell me stories where you had no money, and then all of a sudden it shows up in ways you didn't expect. I know a friend, she was a single parent, and her husband got hooked on drugs. She divorced him. And there are times where she committed to stay at home with her kids. And there are times where she could not pay the house payment. And the next morning she would get up, and in the mailbox there would be a check that would cover her house payment. One time she wanted a dog so bad she could taste it. And the next month, or someplace down the road, there was a house payment check and enough money to get the dog. And so again, God is saying, trust, just, he's saying, come on. He's like, you want, you know, like a little kid saying, you want a piece of me? And they start a fight. God's saying, come on. This is a promise I made. Will you trust me? Will you entrust yourself and these kids that I've given to you? Trust me on this. You don't need more stuff. I was actually struck. I was listening to a parent, Dennis, teaching in an old servant team retreat. And he said he and Holly went in debt so that she could stay home with the kids because he knew eventually he would make more money. But he was so convinced of the value of her being able to stay at home. They took a beating financially, trusting God that he was going to provide. And so this may be one like the main issue. Do I really believe God's going to be faithful? Am I willing? Yeah. But not only that, with our kids, you stay at home because it's an opportunity to invest in something that's going to last for eternity. These kids are going to, you're going to be with them in heaven. You're making an investment in something that the rewards will be staggering. Now, does it mean everything will turn out great? No. I'm not saying that. But there'll be, here, you guys know this verse too, and I forgot to add it on your notes. Don't store up for yourselves treasures on earth where moss and vermin destroy and where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven where moss and vermin do not destroy and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Why in the world would you want to go make more money so you could buy more junk so that it could rust and get stolen and break down and wear out? Why would you? Why? He said, here, you know, back in 1992, if you would have bought 100 shares of Starbucks stocks for $1,700, this is 1992, you know how much it'd be worth in like 2010? It's like $1 point some million. Now, if you had done without and sacrificed to scrape up the $1,700 to buy those shares of stock, would anybody said you sacrificed when you cashed them in for $1 million 20 years later? You say, no, wow, you are smart, you are wise, you are brilliant. Oh my gosh. It's the same way with your kids. It's the same. It's not a sacrifice. You're just being smart. You're just being wise. You're investing in something that will last forever. And that when, I'm telling you, again, I'm old, but when you look back, you'll never, ever regret it. You'll never say, oh, crap, I'm so bummed that I went to the pumpkin patch with him. Darn it. You say, no, you'll never do that. You'll say, wow, it was great. Oh, it was hard. Yes. Oh, and there was blood flying. Yes. But, oh yeah. Yeah. So here's some questions to ask you. How grumbly, I think I made that word up, but it actually doesn't come up in the spell check thing. How grumbly are you when you can't buy some stuff? How grumbly are you? You didn't get a new pair of jeans or something or whatever. Do you talk to your kids about God's faithfulness in this area? Yeah, talk to them about it. You don't have to give them all the bloody details because they'll be really bored very quickly as you're giving them your line item budget or anything like that. But you could say, wow, Lord, look how Lord provided. We needed this and look. Oh, my gosh. Huh. See how faithful God is. When's the last time you said no to a non-essential item? You said, nope, we're not going out to dinner tonight. We're going to have pancakes and green beans. That's what we're having tonight for dinner. We did that one time. Yeah. The kids were young enough, they didn't know that those things didn't go together. They just like, okay, this is great. Yeah. So you got to stop and think, because this is an area where our culture is going to be very aggressive to tell you that you're fools to stay at home, especially if you have a career. Oh, my gosh. And again, I'm not saying that there's no room for the stay-at-home parent to do something a little bit here and there. I'm not saying that. But where is your heart inclined towards materialism? Is it literally to make, you know, to meet necessities? Because there are single parents who have no choice but to work. And there are going to be some families that there's no choice but parents work. And that's where the church, that's where our community should come along and figure out how can we come alongside people who literally have no other choice. But the reality is, for a lot of people in America, for a lot of people in this church, we got a choice. The choice is, am I going to live in a bigger house and have a nicer car and have more gadgets and the newest, nicest thing? Or am I going to do less in this area so that I can be at home with my kids? And when I'm home with my kids, I'm not worried about how are we going to pay off this incredible debt I've incurred because I've bought this and I've bought this and I've bought this. And now I have no choice but to go to work. And when I go to work, not only do I have to pay daycare, but man, we got all these other bills to work along too. So if you're young, make these decisions now that you live on one income, that you stay within your means. Talk to your friends about it. That's another un-American thing, right? You'd actually ask input about your finances. So there is a cost. There's going to be a cost, financial cost, to stay at home. But the more you have God's perspective, it's not such a great cost. It's, I mean, you're investing your time and your effort in something that you'll get a reward for. You're going to get a return for. So that's the first cost. The second cost, who am I? Who am I? Who, right? You guys have all been to parties. You've all been to parties. And somebody says, what do you do? What do you tell them? I'm a stay-at-home mom. What? I'm a stay-at-home mom. Oh, okay. Well, I got to go get something to drink. Because then what? And then, and it seems like you always end up with the person with the most glamorous job ever. Right? What do? I'm saving the world. And I'm traveling all over the world to save the world. And it's exciting and glamorous. And I, look how nicely I'm dressed. And right? If you haven't had that experience, you will. You will. And what do you begin to think? Am I stupid or what? And their life is so glamorous. And look at mine. You know, I'm wiping butts and high chair trays and noses, right? Right? Right. Yes. Yeah. I'm just trying to figure out what we're having for dinner tonight. We've had spaghetti four nights in a row. We got to have something else. So we begin this. It is a huge cost. I never envisioned I'd be a stay-at-home mom. I have a career. What will my friends say? They'll think I'm lazy and I couldn't do anything else. So I thought I'd stay at home. Those are the kind of lies that come into our head when often we're in situations where everybody else seems to have the more glamorous thing and their life seems more richer than ours staying at home. And it is a cost to keep reading the same book over and over again because they like it and think you'll never have another adult conversation again, right? Or I used to hide from my children so I could read a novel. Yes. I'm a nobody. I'm just a stay-at-home parent. So that's one. But then the other extreme, when it comes to parenting, is that your primary identity is I'm a stay-at-home parent. That's who I am. That's what I do. And unfortunately, I think I know this very well in my own little heart. When this happens, our children then become means to make us feel good about ourselves, right? And so it goes like this. Who am I? I'm a parent. What do? I parent. Problem with that, if I have a bad day, poor performance, what am I? I'm a bad parent. I'm a bad person because my identity is I am a parent. What if your kids have a bad day? What if your kids are in the grocery store throwing a fit or you're leaving the party and you're the kid, your kids are the ones that are going nuts? I must be a bad parent. And so again, when our primary identity is being a parent, then we start using our kids to make us feel good about ourselves. And so again, I don't have to go much farther than my own parenting. I manipulate my kids so that they look good, so that the people around me that I want to impress think my kids are a certain way because how they act depends on me. I didn't like to discipline them because then they wouldn't love me, and I wanted to use them to make me feel loved. Manipulate, withhold affection. How many times do you see yourself parenting your kids so that your parents think you're a good parent? I remember the Lord like pointing that out. He's like, you're doing this because you want your mom to think you're a good parent. You don't believe in any of the crap you're trying to enforce. I'm like, you're right. And so we know, if you've been a parent very long, you know the poor ways we parent. If our primary sense, of value, if we feel loved, is rooted in our kids. We do manipulate and we withhold affection. We get stupid over discipline. either easy, too easy or too hard. We won't tell anybody about issues, right? And so we all, if you've been a parent very long, we're all, this is, don't go, oh my God, I can't believe I do this. Say, oh yeah, rather say, oh yeah, here I go again today, right? Here I go again today. It's part of who we are. And so the most wonderful thing about Christ is he shows it to us and then it gives us his spirit so that we can be different. And so that when we see it, we don't go into this pile of guilt, but we say, oh, thank you, Lord. Here I am again, lying about the condition of my kids so my friends will think I'm spiritual. We're dumb. We are dumb. Then here's the latest twist. And I don't know if it's this late, but I just saw this article in the Time magazine. You got to be the perfect parent. This is called the goddess myth. It's an article about giving birth and breastfeeding. And you, like, I don't know who wrote it, but sure, one my experience. But there's incredible pressure that you're just supposed, like, everything's glorious and great, and you're going to look radiant through the whole thing. So, like, there's another, and then with social media, I feel bad for you guys. You just can't have a birthday party for your kid with, like, balloons. You got to have the train and this and that because everybody else has posted on social media how fancy and brilliant their birthday party was for their two-year-old. And golly, if you just have cake and ice cream with the grandparents, then you must stink as parents. You suck. Come on, you, right? And so there's this incredible pressure. And it's start. I mean, it's now it's starting how you even give birth. Here's a quote. It says, but like millions of other American moms, she has been bombarded by a powerful message. That she's built to build a human, that she will feel all the more empowered for doing so as nature supposedly intended, and that the baby's future depends on it. Call it the goddess myth, spun with a little help from basically everyone, doctors, activists, other moms. It tells you that breast is best, that if there's a choice between a vaginal birth and major surgery, you should want to push. That your body is a temple and what you put in it should be holy, that sending your baby to the hospital nursery for a few hours after giving birth is a dereliction of duty. Oh, and that you will feel and look radiant. Exactly. Oh, my God. Right. But that's the kind of pressure. Yeah. I like now it's, there's some, you know, some of those truths. Yeah. But the emphasis, the overemphasis that you're it's. And that if you do anything differently, you must be a bad mom, right? And then it goes to talk about breastfeeding and how you're shunned and thrown. Just it's just incredible. And so from and so can you imagine? And you can't imagine the amount of pressure that's put onto you as a mother to perform. And if you don't perform, if you don't by this unknown, uncertain them. If you don't perform to that vague standard, but you know what it is because you're not meeting it, there's an incredible amount of pressure. And it's going to come out on the way you parent. You have to perform. You have to perform. And kids sure are not going to encourage that much at all, right? So there's a loss of identity. What's God's perspective on you? What's God's perspective on? Does when God look at you, he says, Chelsea, a mother, and da-da-da-da-da. No. He says, Molly, you're an adopted child of the king. That's what God says about us. He says, yeah, you are adopted of not a king, not a kind of powerful fellow, but the king. You're an adopted child of the king, the God that created, sustains, died for you, knows everything. He says, you're my child. That is your primary sense of identity. Yet is who you are. That's who I am. I am a child of the king that's loved, valued, delighted in. And as a king, as your father, he's gonna give you wisdom. He'll sustain you. He'll give you every, he even gave you those kids that you thought you might kill this morning just trying to get out of the house because they had too much sugar, right? He loves you. He says, that is who you are. And because of that, you have an unlimited resource of love and affection and direction and correction and motivation and everything you need. In Galatians, it says that we know the king, but better yet, the king knows us. I remember one time I was in Worthington and it was a breakfast. Anybody remember Earl Bruce? Anybody remember who he is? It's all, yeah. He was a former football coach at Ohio State. I knew Earl Bruce. And that, you know how you have the thing in your mind, like Mary Benedum today? I thought, I know you from somewhere. I almost walked up to Earl Bruce and said, I know you from somewhere. Now, I knew Earl Bruce, but did Earl Bruce know me? No. He would have looked at me. I don't know what he would have done. He'd probably been very nice and polite. But when you go to the king, he says, yes, I know you. Oh, yeah, those kids were driving you crazy today. Yeah. Yeah. Woo. But I know you. I know you're frustrated, but I love you, and I'll sustain you, and I'll take care of you, and I'll give you the strength to go back and apologize. And so primarily, can you see the freedom that you have as you parent, not from your identity as a parent, but you parent from the identity, I am an adopted child of a king, the King of Kings, the Lord of Lords. He loves me, and I am his daughter. That's what Romans says, right? You've not received a spirit of slavery leading to fear again, but you have received a spirit of adoption as sons by which we cry out, Abba, Father. And that's a really intimate relationship there, right? The Spirit himself testifies with our spirit that we are children of God. That's that. That is the perspective, so that when you're frustrated, when you fail, which you will, you think, ah, but this is who I am. When you see yourself trying to look good on the playground with your kids and you're real patient and kind, all that crap. I'm a child of a king. I lost it today. I'm really sorry, you guys. I lost it. But you can apologize because you don't need their... Because you're a child of the king. Ephesians, all through scripture. Ephesians 1, 5 through 8. He predestined us. God predestined you for adoption of sonship through Jesus Christ in accordance with his pleasure and will. To the praise of his glorious grace, which is freely given us in the one he loves. In him, we have redemption through his blood, the forgiveness of sins in accordance with the riches of his grace that he lavished on us. You ever have a kid with a piece of candy that they don't want to give back? You know how you have to pry their fingers off and you get one and they pull it right back? They're holding on to that, or they won't put their arm in their coat and you get one arm in and you're trying to get the other arm in their back like this, right? Yeah, that's not like God. He lavished it upon you. He lavished it. He chose to adopt you like Julie Faulkner did and Chris Faulkner did with a couple kids. They paid a great price to adopt their children because they loved them. And if Julie and Chris paid a great price, how much more did God pay in order to adopt us as children? He wanted to adopt you. He searched you out. Think about it. When you think about how you came into a love relationship with God through Jesus Christ, how he sought you out, right? It wasn't one and done. He didn't say, ah, crap, I told you once. Okay, sorry about that. Over and over and over again, he sought us out because he wanted us to know his love. And that's what he's done. And he says, I want you to know my love in so many different areas of life. But this is a primary way. He says, I want you to parent, not to make yourself feel like you're somebody, but because you are my child, I want you to freely be able to love your kids. And so instead of a loss of identity, I'm not a lawyer anymore. I got something better. I'm a child of the king, and I have access to him whenever I want. You know, so it's a matter of perspective. And there's such great freedom as we parent as an adopted child of the king. Ah, and not only have you adopted child of the king, but he's prepared really good works for us to do, Ephesians 2:10. So believe it or not, changing that baby's diaper, God says that's a great work. Cleaning up the toys again, that's a great work. Taking the time to discipline your child, that's a great work. It's a good work. Christ died in order for you to perform those good works. They're good works. The last return. Why in the world would we want to go make more money? Why? It doesn't make sense. So when's the last time? So if you want to know if you're growing in this area or you're beginning to understand that out of parenting, out of your identity in Christ, ask yourself, when's the last time you told someone about your latest parenting fiasco? I mean, the ones that are near and dear to your heart. Not that I just yelled at Billy. We all got our little idols that we don't want to tell any about. When's the last time you told him about that? When's the last time you asked for input? When's the last time you took input in your parenting? And when's the last time you realized you're parenting for an audience other than God? And that's just stuff to ask. Ask yourself. And you know what? Most of us are going to say, I can't remember. Let me think about that. Huh? You're all in good company. We're in good company. There's nobody here that's going to raise their hand here today and say, this is a waste of my time. I got this all down. I'll see y'all later. No, and even as parenting as adult children, I don't even know what I'm doing half the time. I'm asking other parents their kids are just a little bit older. What'd you do now? So we're all in good company. Now another one really, what about me? What if, like somebody said, what about my time? What about my agenda? What about my life? Often we don't even have time to use the bathroom before someone's knocking on. You're just like, I can't. This is somebody else's story, but it's a great story. You just sit down and you're knocking on the door. Mommy, like, I just wanted to take a dump. Yeah, come on. depending on how long the day has been, right? Some day we're just really, okay, honey. And other days it's like, So the whole issue of your denial of yourself for your children's well-being, right? And that does come down to the most fundamental question, what do we think is going to make us happy? And what we think I can tell you what I think by the way I behave, the way I think, is I think if I get my way and I get my agenda met and my goals met and my dishes done, whatever it is, then I'll be happy. And it negatively impacted the way I parented my kids because I wanted to get something done. And so instead of letting them struggle through it, I would do it so that I could check something off my list. So I realized this, like, man, it's so subtle, but it's so influential in the way we parent. So what's going to make me happy? Is getting my way going to make me happy? Because if you think like that, you have guaranteed yourself to have a frustrating day, right? You've guaranteed it. If you come with this underlying premise that I have to get my way, I have to get my things done, my agendas, my goal, however it's manifested in your life, you've guaranteed a frustrating day. If you have children, right? Because they have a different agenda. And their agenda usually trumps our agenda, right? And so, again, it's going to influence the way you parent. It'll influence the way you parent if you really have bought into this, that I must have my rights in order to be happy. God's perspective on this is so different. He says, our deeply ingrained desire to get our own way, to protect ourselves from inconvenience and discomfort, will lead us to the forfeit of true health and happiness. If you demand your rights, you will be miserable. If you demand to always have your way, you will be miserable. It's never enough, right? I mean, you've been there. We've all been there. It's never enough. I need more. One more free moment. One more my time. Not that you shouldn't have my time or anything like that, but you know what I'm talking about. It's this underlying belief that my children are ripping me off. If I just could just have my way in some area, then I'll be happy. What God says is the denial of our self-centered life will result in true happiness. In John 12:24-25, he says, truly, truly, I say to you, unless a grain of wheat falls into the earth, it dies, it remains alone. But if it dies, it bears much fruit. He who loves his life loses it, and he who hates his life in this world will keep it to life eternal. That passage is not prescribing literal self-hatred, right? It's not saying that you have to hate yourself. And it's not saying you should be a doormat. It's not saying that, not at all. But what it's saying is the call to deny our self-centered life. You know, fortunately, unfortunately, that theme of denying our self-centered life and that will bring us true joy, it's in all four Gospels. I wish this was one of the, oh, by the way, and on really like in a very small part of scripture, this theme was in. Because if it's not repeated very often, it's not important. But if it's repeated frequently, it's very important. And I wonder if you kept track in a day how many times you had this choice from little things to big things. You know, will I set down this my project so that I can be fully engaged with my kid? You know, instead of trying to do email and look at what they're doing, I stop and I turn and say, okay, what do you want, honey? And be fully engaged when you really wanted to write that email. And maybe it really needs to be written, right? It's not that these things aren't valuable and aren't important, but are you willing to set aside what you want to do, my right to just finish an email, and be fully engaged with the kids? In my day, it was when somebody would call on the phone and I'd promise the kids to play a game, I'd have to say, I can't talk to you right now because I've promised to play a game. So I'd say, I'll call you back. Hang up. Do you guys just put away your cell phones? Just put them away. Have a block of time in a day that I won't. I'm putting it in, if you have to put it in a drawer, put it in a drawer. Do something with it. Do something. And Gary calls it, it's the most sophisticated, distracting gadget in the world. Now, maybe you could do it. I sure as heck couldn't. But do something that God is going to call you moment by moment. What am I going to do? Am I going to deny myself in this situation? Or am I going to try to do both? And as we all know, it doesn't work. Because pretty soon the kids are just crazy. They're out of control. They're fussy. You're thinking, why? Oh, that's because I'm trying to do both. Not always. But often that's what Mike and I would see. Our kids would get unpleasant because we were distracted and we wanted to get our home project done. We wanted to get this thing accomplished instead of just stopping and being fully engaged. Now, here's some examples of denying the self-centered life. And I'll stop here pretty quick because I'm going on. You refuse to vent your annoyances at your kid's mess. They made a mess, and you choose not to let them know how much they've put you out by the mess they've made, right? Apologize to your kids, asking or taking input on your parenting, trying not to complain about the interruptions to your plans when they come in with muddy shoes, and not manipulating your kids so you look spiritual. I mean, the list goes on and on and on and on. And again, it'd be interesting if you kept a log. And one day, how many times did God give me the opportunity to deny my self-centered life? I'm not saying that the denial of the self-centered life does not mean that you don't tell your kids no. Oh, for God's sakes, no. You tell them no. You got to tell them no. Ugh. Right. You got to tell your kid no. It doesn't mean that you don't have a hobby or that you have time away from your kids. You better have that or it will be ugly, right? I'm not saying that at all, but what I'm saying is that your own selfish desire should not be the basis for your parenting decisions. That was one thing that Mike and I tried, that when we said no to the kids, it was based on some other reason that we wanted to protect a selfish desire. And I'll tell this story quickly. Our oldest son had a period of time where he was just doing his own thing. And I don't know if it was a big deal to him, but I was always impressed by Mike. It was like midnight, and it was winter break. It was like 10 degrees. And our son says, hey, does anybody want to go over to the track and walk around the track while I run? So it's like 10 degrees. It's midnight. And I'm thinking, no. And Mike's like, yeah, sure. Now, do you think my husband really wanted to go at midnight at 10 degrees and walk around the track in the middle of the night? No, but he didn't let his selfish desire to stay warm be the basis for his parenting decision. And so that's something you can think about. I'm done, but I just wanted to show you. It's a great experience. These are my kids when they were little, the beach and neighborhood kids. And here's what they are now. 28, 26, and 24. I can tell you, days are long and years are short. You think this will never end. You think they're going to be a brat forever. But before you know it, they'll be adults. I'm telling you, you blink. You think, when Kevin graduated from Calumet, he'd been there 10 years. And that was the first time I thought, where did 10 years go? It will go so fast. You will never, ever regret making the sacrifices that you are making in order to stay home with your kids. There's nothing in life that has brought the kind of joy, and we've had our fair share of heartaches, than seeing your kids walk in the light. There's no guarantee if you stay at home that's what's going to happen, but you increase the chances that they might follow the Lord. And that is, there's no greater joy than that. Ask God to keep giving you this perspective, because you're going to lose it as soon as you walk out and the kid throws up or something. So you're going to have to keep asking God, give me this perspective. Stay engaged in community. I cannot encourage you enough. Do whatever it takes to stay involved in community at a biblical level. Don't just show up. You're going to lose your mind, and it's going to be harder with your kids if you don't stay in community. You won't. It's going to be incredible. And then here's some resources. Collie's thing on benefits of staying home is real practical. It's got some really, really good stuff. The Servant-T meeting has some statistics on the value of the difference between kids in daycare, kids at home. And then Edith Schaefer books, What is a Family? I read that years ago. It's very, very good. So I went long. I'm sorry about that. So if you got any questions or comments, or what do we do now? Oh, Sherry.
This is really silly, but the one on denial of self-centered life, can you put that up real quick, Patrice? Because that's not on your handout.
I know, I forgot. Yes, I'm going to redo it. I'm going to fix it and put it out on...
If I don't write it down now. No, okay. I'm not going to look it up.
But yeah,
no.
I'll put it on the computer. I'm going to send Sherry the revised, and then the accurate ones will be on the thing, the internet.
I saw that you have the part about community, but our oldest is 13, so I've been parenting for kind of a long time.
Yeah.
Feels like.
Yes.
But
I bet nothing days it seems really long.
Just, I know. Because I think it, and I still struggle with this, just because I'm a stay-at-home mom doesn't mean I'm parenting by myself.
Right,
and so,
right.
Like, it's hard to ask people to help you, but I think that it is, there are legitimate times, my house, I need.
Yeah.
Too. So I think to feel free,
yeah.
I think I can still feel like I'm home, I need to do this stuff, and just to be willing to ask people, like, I'm overwhelmed,
yeah.
I need a nap, I need to clean my kitchen,
right.
I need, so I think that
right.
The fact that we're home can sometimes feel like that means we have to be like the mom martyr.
Oh, God, no.
But I think that it's important, just the day-to-day stuff.
Yeah.
Can you take my kids to school? Can
right.
You? So that has saved me, but there can be pride involved, and it's hard
yes.
Sometimes to ask people.
Right,
so.
Yeah. No, it's a great point, and that's the value of community. Somebody, you know somebody well enough, and they know your kids well enough, you're like, it's not going to go well today. Can you please take my kids to school? Could you please just watch them for an hour so I could get this thing done? Absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. But I think your point, it's our pride. We're so stupid. We are dumb. We are dumb.
Thanks yeah. for talking about this. So I have a question. I enjoy staying at home. It's not what I thought I would do, so I'm really surprised that I like it.
Yeah.
But one of the sacrifices we made is that my husband had to take a job that he doesn't like so he makes enough money for his
right,
team.
Right.
So when I talk about how much I love it, he's not upset, but you know, he's kind of like, well, I hate my job so that you can love your job kind of thing. And I'm like, I don't know how to respond. Like, oh no, you're right. The kids suck and I don't like, you know, I don't know. Like, how do I respond to him to, like, because I totally appreciate what he's done to allow me to do this.
Right.
And he wants me to stay home, too.
Right.
So it's like, I feel like
right.
I'm in this weird place.
Do you tell him that?
I think so.
I would tell him that as often as you could. I am so yeah. grateful that you, and then I would tell our kids that, too. Because Mike had a really boring job when the kids were little. And he could come home at 4:30 and be totally engaged. And I would tell them, you are so lucky you have the dad you do, because he comes home every night. Aren't we lucky to have a dad? Aren't we lucky that I got to marry him and he's your dad? So I would tell Mike, I would thank him frequently, not as much as I should have, but I would try to. I'm so grateful you go to work every day so I can stay home. I'm so grateful. Yeah, and then I would brag to our kids about him and the cost he was incurring. See how much your daddy loves you. He doesn't like his job, but I get to stay home. So I would just try to make sure he knows. And you know, who cares about us to a large degree? How pleased God is. And how, in Matthew 6, God is so aware of the sacrifice he is making for this long-term investment. And so keep telling him how pleased God is and how God is, yeah, yeah, yeah. But how fortunate we are. That you didn't have a husband who said, no, I want to be all I could be, and so you better go back to work so that I can be. No, he says, he's living out this denial, this self-centered life. Yeah. What a wonderful man he is. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I was, sorry, going to agree with what you were saying as far as communicating to your spouse how much you appreciate them going to work and bragging to your kids about their dad
yeah.
and how much he does that. I'm due on Saturday, so I'm just going to blame the crying on the hormones.
Okay, sure.
But Anyway, the other thing along those lines that I was thinking of is that I read something the other day was, don't spoil your kids, spoil your husband. And I was like, it's so easy to think, oh, my daughter needs this, my daughter needs that, my daughter, you know, and I did not realize how bad my husband needed new work shoes. And I'm like, this is dumb. He's the one that goes to work. He should have a comfortable pair of work shoes, you know, and he's the one that I'm going to be with after my kids leave the house. So it doesn't make sense for me not to spoil my husband. So I've been trying to think of little ways that I can do that. You know, it's like maybe that means packing his lunch for him.
Yeah.
You know, or buying him a sweatshirt just because I know he wants a new sweatshirt. You know, like he should have those things too. So just finding little, I mean, my husband likes words of encouragement too. So even just something as simple as like writing him a little note when I pack his lunch, like that doesn't cost anything. Financially, it costs me energy and mental capacity and those sort of things, which seem to be in limited supply. But
well, you have to live a you have to deny your self-centered life. I'm going to have to choose to now think about him.
Yeah. It's awesome that you want to make sure that your husband knows how much you appreciate him. And yeah, I think just working to spoil him too is good.
That's a great point. Absolutely. Because it is challenging when you have little kids to keep your marriage healthy. And I think the Ruse came and talked 2 months ago on the absolute value that you have to have a good marriage for your kids' benefit. Yeah.
So you referenced Holly's teaching from 2012, which I feel like was so instrumental. I was pregnant with my first child. And I had no idea how much identity I took from what I did.
Right.
And it was such a great experience working through how much I wanted praise from my abilities, from my career. And I really enjoy the fact. Anyway, it saved me. And I was like, okay, screw that. And I'm so happy. God gave me something else. This is awesome. 3 kids later, stay-at-home mom. I don't regret any of that.
Right.
He led me into something better. He does that.
Yeah.
But I really appreciate today just how you kind of took it to the next level. You know, people who have identity crises can often just relocate them.
Yeah.
And so the idea of wanting to take identity from parenting was a great, just great reminder.
Yeah.
And I think something to think about from here on out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, Lorena White spoke on Holly's 2012 teaching. You probably don't even remember. You gave her your story about a whole work and through your identity. Yeah.
Thank you, Patrice. That was really good. I wanted to put a plug in for a book that I'm reading that's by Paul Tripp, and it's a new book.
Okay.
And it's called Parenting:14 Gospel Principles.
Okay.
And so it's kind of like what Stephanie was just talking about, of like, what does it look like to be a parent in light of living in the gospel on a day-to-day basis?
Excellent.
And something he keeps bringing up is that we are more like our kids than unlike them. And that just like they need a parent all the time.
Right, so do we.
We need a parent all the time.
Absolutely.
And it's just been really eye-opening. I'm only 20% of the way through, so maybe the last 80% is not that good.
But yeah,
and he's like, when, you know, like right now our thing is kids staying in bed at night, and it's like bedtime, I'm done, and it's 45 minutes of just...
Right. Hell.
Yes, and I'm done at that point.
Right.
And
right.
Mom's not acting real gracious at that point. And he says, when you're going down the hall and your kids need a parent and you're getting frustrated, like, you also need a parent.
Yes.
And your father is there, and he wants to give you patience. And it's like their sin is acting up, and that's igniting the sin in me. But it's not the kid's fault that I have a sin nature, you know, that I'm reacting in my
yes,
flesh.
Yes, it is their fault.
Because I have a sin nature, and I'm in need of a father who wants to extend grace to me.
Yeah.
It's just been awesome. It's like the best parenting book.
Very good. Very, very good.
I mean, I say that when I'm reading it, but I really, really encourage. It's been very helpful.
For right now, it is hitting you right where you
that's
need.
Right.
And God is like that. He'll bring along what we need in the moment so that we can parent well. Yeah. So whenever you say, Sherry, stop, we'll stop. Sure. Lorena wants to talk again. No. You did. You gave your story.
I remember. I know. I was trying to be all cool and stuff.
Okay.
I'm not cool anymore at all.
You're a mom. You're not cool anymore.
I just had 2 points that I thought about when you were talking about finances. I was thinking about just the idea of learning how to manage money in general, I think has been important for me, because I've been the other extreme of like feeling guilty for spending any money on myself and essentially being the underspender, which can start to take a strange toll on you too. So I think knowing what your tendencies are, and even just talking to John McEwen or whoever about money, that's been a thing for me. And also, yeah, kind of like what that other girl said about just being in touch with your husband and being in touch with the Lord. My husband and I just got to a point where we basically were disconnected. And somehow we just, whatever, I can blame it on whatever, but it's like we stopped being able to be honest with each other about our thoughts and feelings. And so, you know, there was a mom that talked over there about, I feel strange about my situation. And I think being able to tell your husband that, this is how I feel. I feel guilty because of this or whatever. And sometimes we can start realizing that our marriages ought to be a safe place where we can say those things. And our husbands will be that. You know, I was having one of those weepy, losing it. I had a meltdown with my husband the other day, and it was great because I haven't been able to do that for a while. I mean, we've gotten counseling to get us to that point. But he's the one that was like, well, I thank you for staying home with my kids. And it's like just him saying that, because it is objectively a thankless job. Like your children, I try to be all spiritual and, oh, second corporate one really helps me when I'm, and my 9-year-old literally said, I don't want to look up that verse. I'm a kid. Like, do you have a lollipop? Literally. So I'm like, all right. But like, they're not going to thank you like adults do. So emotionally, it starts to take a toll on just what you do. It literally is a thankless job. So I think being in touch with what it is that is bugging you and talking to your husband and talking to the Lord, and then having that scriptural truth to back up that, you know, our praise will come from God and our, you know, just, I just feel like nobody sees me. I feel invisible. It's like being able to get in touch with what's bothering you and then having those verses that you can memorize. Does that make sense?
Be honest and let the Lord. And that's where community is helpful too, because they give me something. You're being really unpleasant today.
I guess I just wanted to share my own experience with ungratefulness kind of from a different perspective. But my husband has a job where he makes like incredibly little money, and I had to work for several years, and actually still have to work. And so, like, part of me has this, like, little bit of mom guilt. Like, I want to stay at home with my kids so badly, and didn't have the opportunity really till the beginning of this year, where I had a job that's super flexible. I work weekend nights, so Michael's home with the kids, and I'm so glad I don't have to leave them with somebody else. But, you know, part of me ends up like, but I don't want to have to work at all. And so part, like, something I have to struggle through is just my gratefulness. Like, I'm just, on good days, on most days, I'm like, thank you, God, that I have this job that is so flexible that I can leave my kids at home 3 or 4 times a month with Michael. And
with their dad.
And it's hard for him because I have to sleep through the day. And, you know, he's like a single dad on the weekends, every other weekend. But I just really have to struggle through, like, being grateful for what I have. Thanks, God, for this opportunity. And I guess we'll see what happens. Maybe, you know, we always counted on him getting a job where he makes more, and hasn't happened for 5 years. So, I don't know, there's that perspective too, like the people that really want to stay home and how can we be grateful for the opportunities God still gives us, you know?
Well, I think it's also pretty, it reflects upon the value you put at staying home, because you are working at nights, which is harder. It's you've chosen a way that's harder so that your kids, somebody can be at home with their kids, which I think is really commendable. It's really real. I know somebody who'd stocked groceries all night so that she could stay home and deliver the newspaper, because she wanted to be, they both were committed to her being at home with the kids. So I think it's really, but you're right. I think it's a great point, but also commend your willingness to do weird crap so that, much more difficult things, so that you can be home. It's pretty cool. It's wonderful. So, okay, we're done. Lordy. Okay, I'll pray quick, then we're done. God, thank you that you've given us, you gave us your son, and he died for us so that we could be redeemed, we could be restored. That I bet you, Lord, most of us shudder to think where our lives would be apart from you. So we're grateful for that, grateful for our kids. And Lord, I thank you that we can turn to you moment by moment, that you'll give us what we need so that we can parent well. Amen.
This study was recorded at Xenos Christian Fellowship and is copyrighted. You may freely copy and distribute it as long as you keep it intact and do not sell it.